Welcome to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Central Catskill region. Being a family caregiver for a loved one who is ill or frail or disabled may come from a place of love, but it can also be a very stressful responsibility, sometimes jeopardizing the physical, emotional, and financial health of the caregiver. There are 53 million family caregivers in the United States who provide critical daily unpaid assistance, mostly, to loved ones, including to the more than 18 million people who have cancer. They often provide what can be really complex care with little or no support or training from health professionals. Dr. Nicholas Odom is a registered nurse who is very concerned about this situation. Dr. Odom is an associate professor of nursing at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. There's a Binghamton here, Nick, and I just got that twisted with Birmingham. And he's also a fellow at the University of California at Davis's Betty Irene Moore Nurse Innovators and Leaders Fellowship. Nick, thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills today.
It's a delight to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And let me just, for transparency purposes, say that I know Nick because I teach in that program. This is the last year for it. It's an amazing program. And, yeah, I knew about Nick's work and thought I wanted him to share some of the work that he's doing. So, Nick, tell us first what got you interested in this issue of, you know, the challenges that family caregivers face when they're caring for family members, particularly with cancer.
Yeah, so when I was just starting my career, I was an ICU nurse for about 10 years, caring for very sick, dying patients who were receiving very aggressive treatments near end of life. And what struck me wasn't just what patients were going through, it was also what their families were going through. By the time many families arrive in the ICU, they'd often been on a long, exhausting journey, and then at the very end, they find themselves in an ICU surrounded by a bunch of machines, ventilators, monitors, alarms, people doing procedures. And for many families, this wasn't what they imagined dying would look like, and it certainly isn't something that had been, you know, portrayed on TV. And I just remember feeling tremendous compassion for these families. They were trying to make difficult decisions on very little sleep. They're trying to cope with a lot of uncertainty. They're looking at someone who looks nothing like what they usually do, connected to a bunch of machines and tubes and then a gown. And, you know, those experiences really stayed with me. I've often said to people that what I do now is to try and help people avoid people like me at the very end of life in the ICU. But you know, much of my work now has moved much further upstream so that, if for nothing else, families and close friends can be much more supported before they get to their loved one's end of life.
So I want to talk about some of the research that you've done, and there were two papers that you published, one in 2003. You were the lead author on a paper in JAMA Network Open that was a survey of cancer centers that looked at the extent to which they integrate into their services these interventions that we now know can really be helpful to family caregivers. And then you published another paper, and that one was in psycho-oncology. And that did a deeper dive on this, it seemed. You talked about the survey, but then you also did some interviews. Tell us what you why did you do this piece in particular, and what did you find?
Yeah, so over the past two decades, researchers like me, you know, we've been developing programs and interventions for family caregivers of people with serious illness, including cancer. And, you know, in large part, these programs do show positive benefit. They reduce distress. They help you feel more prepared. They improve your quality of life. They even help you improve the care you deliver to patients. And so the question these two studies really asked at a high level was, if these programs work, why don't we see more cancer centers using them? So as you said, we conducted this national survey of 238 cancer centers across the U.S. We found that about three quarters had at least some type of caregiver support program. But when you look at a little deeper at the data, the picture becomes much less encouraging. A quarter of those cancer centers had no caregiving programs at all, and the most common services were simply the provision of information and referrals. Relatively few centers offered programs that actually taught caregivers how to manage symptoms, how to perform complex medical and nursing tasks, how to care for themselves, how to cope with stress. And perhaps most strikingly, only about 8% of those programs had been developed based on published scientific evidence. Only about 12% were chosen because there was evidence showing that they worked. So the problem wasn't that no one cared about caregivers. The problem was that the science wasn't making its way into routine cancer care. So in that second study, we wanted to know, well, why? So we surveyed and then interviewed cancer center leaders, clinicians, administrators from around the country, and what they told us was incredibly informative. They said they want to support caregivers, but they need practical help to develop these services. They needed training. They needed guidance. They needed materials. They needed ways to evaluate these programs, strategies for getting their leadership and their administrators to really buy in. And they emphasized that any program had to fit their mission. It needed to be feasible for clinicians who are already extraordinarily stretched, and it needed to be affordable. So in other words, the challenge wasn't necessarily a lack of interest. It was a lack of implementation support.
So what are you doing with that information now? What are your plans? Or maybe you've already started to undertake some actions to intervene.
So we have. So using data from those studies and those two papers, we've built now a national training and implementation initiative. It's called Project Insight, spelled I-N-C-I-T-E. The idea is pretty simple. We don't need to spend another 20 years proving that caregiving support matters or that it works. We already know it matters and we know it works. What we need is a way to help cancer centers put that evidence into practice. And so Project Insight, it's funded by the National Cancer Institute. It brings together cancer center teams from across the country. We train them on evidence-based caregiving support. We provide them practical tools and resources. We connect them with national experts and help them to develop plans to fit their local settings. And in many ways, we're trying to be this bridge between research and routine care.
And what kind of response do you think you'll get, or have you already had one?
We're going to have eight cohorts of participants from cancer centers across the country. We just finished our first cohort, and we had over 58 clinicians and administrators from 15 different cancer centers nationwide. And exceeded our expectations for what we were hoping for in our first cohort. So our next cohort, we actually have an application process, but the next one, the application's due June 15th, but that cohort number two will start soon.
And will you have more?
We'll have eight total cohorts, and we have funding at the moment to go through the year 2030, but our plan is to try to get this grant funding renewed in the next couple of years.
Great. So just to give people a sense of what you're talking about, what kinds of interventions, give us sort of like what would be the top two interventions that you think all cancer centers or all hospitals who care for people with cancer ought to have to support family caregivers?
I think if we're just going to boil it down to two types of services, I think that the one model that has worked very well because it fits within a billable business scheme is counseling services typically delivered by psychology or psychiatry or social workers who can bill in their state. to provide one-on-one counseling to caregivers. I think this model comes up a lot because you can actually bill for services, and in a at least at first a straightforward sense, you see quote-unquote these caregivers as patients. And so they're billed for their normal medical insurance, but they receive counseling specific to their caregiving role. And so a lot of the centers that came in our first cohort were interested in what that month, what that caregiver's clinic might actually look like. A second model utilizes more navigation type support. And there's less straightforward ways to bill for navigation services, albeit there are some. I won't go into details, but a lot of cancer centers are also interested in implementing models that use more community health workers and lay navigation services to provide caregiving support. And so we've also tended to focus on those.
And just say what navigation services, what you mean by that.
So lay navigators are a somewhat new type of role in most cancer centers and health systems generally, where folks typically without much healthcare background can receive a limited amount of training, maybe up to 50 hours, but be able to provide a good frontline type of support that's in many ways, as the name suggests, focused on navigating healthcare systems that can be complex. It can be sort of as simple as finding parking and having someone to escort you to the office building or the medical suite where your clinical appointments are. These folks can often offer some basic financial guidance and counseling, and they're in large part a resource connector. They're able to do distress screening, identify what the issue is, and then route patients and families to the best service or program that are available for that particular issue. So that's you know, lay navigation can look very different depending on where you are. And there's also nurse navigators or social work navigators. And so there's different sort of scopes of what can be done in each of these roles. I think, you know, in order to build a program for families when just providing care to patients has typically already overstretched staff, a lot of folks are interested in lay models to kind of tap into an untapped workforce pool.
And they're cheaper.
And they can be cheaper. That is correct.
So I want to just note that, you know, this radio station is located in a very rural community. While there's a critical access hospital here, it just is, you know, it's not a place for cancer treatment per se, although I'm hoping that someday the hospital will be able to provide some of the IV chemotherapy that people need on a repeated basis. But the hospital, the health system it's a part of is located an hour away in Kingston. Now that hospital, Health Alliance, recently came under a great deal of criticism because they closed a cancer support house. And that was for patients, but I believe it was also for family caregivers. And there was quite an uproar about it. People seemed to really value it in the community. And so I'm interested in, and you sparked my attention in talking about, you know, being able to bill for some services, the counseling services, and maybe even some navigation services. But so that piqued my interest because my question to you was going to be, you know, what would you advise in terms of people who really are concerned about the closure of that service? And obviously, in a time when that hospital, most hospitals these days are trying to figure out how are they going to balance their budgets, given the cuts in Medicaid and the changes in the Affordable Care Act that are leaving many more people uninsured. So what would you advise the community or the people who have been served and don't want to see that practice go away or that support service go away? What would you advise them about how to talk with hospital administrators, health system administrators about why they should and can be providing these services?
Yeah, what I would say is that you have to win hearts and minds. The first part is kind of easy. It's not that hard to convince most human beings that Family caregivers are carry an enormous burden. They're the backbone of care in the community. They deserve our support, and it's just the right thing to do. Typically, that's not hard to do. You can come up with a few really good stories, and you'll have no problem, tapping on people's heartstrings. And then you also have to win minds. And I think that's where the real challenge. It's the practical argument. And for this, I would encourage, you know, those in the community to really start thinking like a business person, to frame caregiving support not just as an extra service, but as a part of delivering high quality and highly efficient cancer care. So, you know, oh gosh, sorry. My alarm is going off. I don't know if you can hear it.
No, okay, we didn't hear.
You know, one thing we learned from our studies is that cancer centers are much more likely to adopt programs when they align with their organization's mission and when they have leadership support and when it demonstrates value. And so, in fact, more than 80% of our respondents on our survey told us that cost effectiveness and demonstrated benefit were major considerations to them being able to have these programs. So I think what I would tell folks is to try and put an economic hat on and find data about how supporting caregivers can result in fewer avoidable hospital admissions. It can decrease healthcare utilization, and ultimately it improves the care to patients.
Yeah, and people should know that hospitals get dinged if they discharge somebody and they come under Medicare and they come back within 30 days and have to be rehospitalized for the same condition. So it's in their interest to not want those hospital readmissions. And who's going to be the person that's going to keep that person, that patient, out of the hospital again? It's that family caregiver. So Nick, just a last question here for people who are listening who may be a family caregiver, possibly of somebody with cancer, maybe with somebody at some other condition. And knowing that we're in a very rural area, and so for some people, if they're going for highly specialized care, they might travel 2 to 3 hours to New York City. And yeah. So there's, you know, it's not like you're going to be going back and forth a lot. So what would you suggest to a family caregiver who's really struggling to sort of continue every day to provide this complex care to their loved one? What would you tell them?
I think the first thing I would say is this, that if you're struggling, what you're experiencing is normal. It has nothing to do with you being some sort of failure in your role. Caregiving is hard. It's complicated, and it is not in any way like it used to be. Many caregivers believe they should be able to do everything themselves, and they feel guilty when they're exhausted or they're overwhelmed, like they're just not enough. Second, don't wait until you're in a crisis to ask for help. Reach out to your friends, your family members, your healthcare providers, support groups, your faith, religious community, whoever is a part of your social network. Ask for help. Most people would like to help you. Relatedly to that, be specific when you ask for help. Instead of saying something like, you know, let me know if I, you know, it would be great if you could help me out this weekend. Try saying something like, could you pick up groceries on Thursday? Or could you stay with mom for 2 hours while I go out for a walk? Yeah. You know, people often want to help, but they don't exactly know how. Finally, just I would say taking care of yourself is not selfish. It's very much, if you want to care for that person in front of you, you have to take care of yourself. Yeah. It's trite, but you can't pour from an empty cup. And I think many people forget that it's kind of more like a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And, you know, that whole thing on airlines, you put your own mask on, the parent puts their mask on before putting it on their kid, because in the meantime, you could pass out, and that kid could pass out, too. So,
you shouldn't have to be a moral superhero.
Well said.
To provide good care.
Well, And that is Dr. Nicholas Odom. He is an associate professor of nursing at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and a fellow in the at the University of California, Davis's Betty Irene Moore Nurse Innovators and Leaders Fellowship. And he clearly is innovating in ways that hopefully, Nick, this is going to move forward and we all will benefit from it. Thank you so much for the great work you're doing and for coming on to Health Center and the Catskills today, Nick.
Feeling very grateful. Thank you so much for having me.
And if people want to read more about your work, how would they do that?
Yeah, if you could just jump on Google, you can Google my name. And if you're interested to learn more about my work, just put Nick Odom PhD or something, and I'm pretty easy to find. If you want to learn more about the Insight program, if you work with a cancer center, it's INCITE. Is the name of the program that I discussed today.
Great. And that's Nick Odom, O-D-O-M. Nick, have a great weekend, and thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back.